I thought this would be a nice time if people would like to share any memories or experiences with Swamiji. So if anybody feels prompted to, they can just speak it out so everyone can hear.
I'll share two experiences. First time I went to India, I was flying all over the place, and I flew over to Hyderabad where he was staying. And the first time I came in, he said, come back at five. They told me to come back at five. So I went upstairs and I fell asleep. I overslept and missed seeing him. So the next morning, I went to see him. And I said, Swamiji, I'm sorry. I overslept and I didn't get a chance. I didn't wake up. And he said, it's okay, you're tired. And that same day, I was sitting in front of him in the Half Lotus. And then that afternoon, I met him twice there. And the second time, he would bring a chair up next to him, and he said, "Come up and sit next to me." I sat next to him, and he asked me, "Do you have any questions?" And I said, "No, Swamiji, I don't need to ask any questions. I'm okay." And he just had a grin on his face. And the second time was at the hospital dedication, the new hospital. And it was unexpected. We were leaving the hospital, and he looked at me straight, and then just unconditional love I felt from him, just pouring. Humility I've never felt before. And I just kind of wept, and I looked at him, and I kept looking at him. He kept driving away, and I kept looking at him. I just want to keep looking at him because it was just pouring his love out. Usually that, and it happens when you least expect it. It was like that was the last time I saw him, the last darshan. And those eyes. If he was there now, I'd probably be back in India. So that's it.
We've been to India three times, and the first time after that, and Swamiji was in some pretty good health, and so we were going in to see him quite a bit, like every single night and stuff like that. And I had quite a few experiences with Swamiji being very stern with me for different things that I was doing. So great, really good lessons, but he was quite clear that he was actually very stern, and I knew what he was teaching me was really important. But the second time that I went, he was so loving, and I had the same experience that you had, Raul. He just looked at me one day, and David and I, it was just before lunch, it was like 11:30, and I think David said, "Let's go see if we can sit and see Swamiji." So we just kind of walked in, and this was when Swamiji was still in the older building, and I don't think he had had a stroke, I can't remember, but anyway, he was sitting in there, and he was just doing some work, and David and I just kind of sat down, you know, and there's comings and goings, and David and I just kind of sat there, and they didn't, it's kind of like if they don't tell you to leave, then you can just stay there, so that's what we did, and he just looked at me, and I've had the same experience that you had, Raul. I just felt so much love in my heart just opened, and he was it was one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had, and it was so loving and sweet and unconditional love. And I got up and I was, when we left, when he said, "Okay, it's time for you to go," we got up and left, and I was just weeping. I was so moved, and it was such a different experience. My love for him didn't diminish because he was being stern with me, but it was just two different, very different experiences with him from the first time to the second time. So, quite beautiful.
Want to tell the story about the sari?
Well, part, we were the first time that we had gotten there, we were sitting there, and Swamiji gave us the saris that they're Mataji saris. That it's the type of sari that Mataji wears, like what Kate's got on, and he would give those out, but you know, to people. So he gave one out to me, and on one occasion, and then I think maybe a week later, he was handing them out to other people. And he started to hand one. I mean, he started to hand one to me, and I said, "Oh, Swamiji, you've already given me one." And Kate, and I think somebody else was in the background, like, "No, we don't do that. We don't move." He kind of looked at me, and I just kind of stopped. And he, you know, when I said that, and he said, "Well, I haven't seen you wear it." Sorry. And so from that point on, there was never a time that if I knew that we were going to see Swamiji, I always had a sorry one. So, but yeah, he made it real clear that he hadn't seen me in a sorry, and he did say that he loved to see women in saris. That was something that he really liked.
Well, and that you didn't know how to put a sari on either before that.
Yeah.
And Monsi came over every night, for at least 2 weeks and helped you to put the sari on.
Yeah.
So, bless her heart.
Yeah, she came. We always had a kind of standing appointment to see Swamiji. I think it was about 8 o'clock. So every single night, right on the dot, Monsi, who's now Swami Maitri Ananda. She was right on the dot. She was there at 7:30, helping me put the sari on.
I think it's just Maitri.
She doesn't have the Ananda?
No.
Mm.
Well, I can do so many things, but I didn't know what to talk about. So I was sitting on the plane coming back two days ago, and I could really hear the Om Shri Rams, and I was thinking about how the people at the ashram and all over the world, you know, especially at the ashram, they were celebrating this day yesterday. So I guess that's the main why I was hearing it. But I was kind of asking Swamiji what I should think about him. And there had been this couple in front of us, and they had this very poorly behaved child, and they were just, everything they'd say to him, he'd say, "No, no." And the mother kept saying, "Would you like a cracker? No. Would you like a cookie? No. Would you like," and she was, you know, really indulging him, and I was, oh my goodness, these people, can't they, you know, why don't they take care of their child? And then I just all of a sudden started thinking about Swamiji, and I was thinking how he didn't mind telling people. I mean, he would tell people when something wasn't right. And he would, you know, he wasn't afraid to make a value judgment at all. And he would tell them when something wasn't right, but then there was always that feeling of love to the person as well. So the one thing he said in my presence once, because it had to do with me, although it wasn't directed to me, he was talking about another person, and he said that she was displaying behavior unbecoming to a devotee. Mm-hmm. And I never forgot that phrase, because I thought it was a very good phrase, that anytime you're doing something and you're behaving in a way unbecoming to a devotee, and you know that that's not the right thing to do. And then I saw him a few other times say things to people that weren't, they weren't doing the right thing. And so my musings continued on, and that was that you could, you know, you can read things, and people could say all sorts of sage things and wise things, and you might take them to learn something about it in your life. But when somebody in the stature of Swamiji says something, that it is charged with something so special, with that love and the power. And that when I started thinking about him, I immediately felt the energy coming up my spine, and I thought, you can't read a wise book the same way and have just somebody tell you how to live in the way that someone like Swamiji can when he says those words. So important. So I sat there, and instead of being disturbed by the noisy family in front of me, I just started feeling love for them. At the same time, being aware that they were behaving in a way that I didn't think they should behave towards their child. And all of a sudden, the child settled down, and he was good for the rest of the flight. Mm-hmm. But that was just kind of by the by. That just started all my thought processes with them. But I thought that I'll never forget that phrase of Swamiji's, because it's something that I think about whenever I am behaving in a way unbecoming to them. I'm glad it wasn't me he was talking about.
So fond of him. That's it. So, such a kind man. Compassion.
You know, when I was in the Eucharist and back in 1958, and Swamiji was very much the loyal servant. Quiet, unassuming, constantly serving. I don't know whether he'd reached his master for that time or not. But he was a beautiful soul. Mark was there.
Wasn't the place to go. So I wrote a letter to Swamiji, like, what do I do here, now? You know, I'm searching, and I don't know where to go. And he wrote back this, first place he wrote, dearest mother or something, and I was like, oh no. So that really got me. And I wrote back and forth with him a few times when just I felt like I needed God in person to talk to me. And then one time when David was in India, I desperately needed to talk to David. And he said, oh, do you want to talk to Swamiji? And I'm like, oh, like it was a rock star or something. He's like, oh my goodness. Anyway, I think I said hi. That's about it. But it was memorable.
So you did meet him.
He was always very conscious of all the devotees here. None of us went there where he didn't say something about people that I can see out of Canada.
Mm-hmm. He had a good memory because I know when we were little girls and we would go to Mataji's room at 10 o'clock every day, she would tell us stories and then she would give us chocolates. So we would all be there prompt at 10 o'clock. And if girls didn't have their hair tied up, and you know, she would make sure tied herself, and my hair was like, they never stayed in wherever it was. It would always fall down, and she would always tie it. And then we were so used to growing up with her that when she took some, and I went to a convent school, so we prayed Father in Heaven. So for some reason, my brain was working a little weird. So when Mataji took samadhi, instead of feeling sad, I went to Swamiji running and I said, well, now I have a mother on earth and I have a mother in heaven. And everyone was grieving and I was just so excited that now I had a mother in heaven. It was really weird because I told him that I kept praying in school and I couldn't see the Father in heaven. So now at least I have a mother in heaven. At least when I say I have a mother in heaven, at least it is there. And so he's like, so what does that make me? And I'm like, I don't quite know. So when we were growing up, though, when I was grown up, and he remembered the childhood conversation, although in my mind it was. So he actually asked me, so I was very sad when I was coming because I knew I wouldn't see him again. That was in 2006. And he had a stroke, and he was really sick 2 days before I left, and they were not letting anybody in. It was just nobody. And I was really worried because I'd never left ashram without Swamiji as the Panchvati saying me bye. And so I was like, I don't know, like, you know, and because of my green card condition, I knew that I wouldn't be able to travel after that. So I asked him, I was like, I told my mom, you know what, I don't care, I'm going to not fly until I can meet Swamiji because I'm not leaving without meeting him. And my mom was in a fix, like, what do I do now? And 2 days later, I'm supposed to fly to U.S., so. And then Swamiji sends a message to call me in. So he had the needles, and he had the saline, and he sits up, and his face is bright, and I was like, oh, I'm serious. I said, I don't know, I didn't think you would get up. And he said, how could I not get up for you? So I was like, okay, so am I going to see you again? I had to ask that direct question because I had to hear it from him. And he said, maybe not. And that time I was all like total stoic. I didn't know what to say. And then he said, well, then you'll have a father in heaven. So it was, he remembered it all the way through. And I was so shocked because, I mean, I remembered it, but I didn't want to, you know, at this time there was that emotion, you know, because you were older. When you were young, you didn't have that emotion, but now you have that emotion. And I practically grew up with him, so it was like, yeah, I mean, it's okay as a joke, you know? And so it was still a little shocking, but then he said, well, yours is to be happy, and you just have to be happy no matter what. And don't stop coming to ashram, you have to come every 2 years. And I said, okay. Because my green card is every 2 years, but he said that. So, but it was funny that he remembered. I was probably 5 years or 8 years when I had that conversation. That was like ages. Even my mother didn't remember that, and so he remembered it. So that was, and he took his own death in such a jovial way. And then he made me sit down because I was like in a state of shock. Like somebody's dying and somebody's telling me he's dying. You know, then he made me sit down and explain me the concept of the body passing over, and you have to let go of the body at some point. But you know, so he explained me that concept, which was very sweet of him. And maybe it was needed for that moment. It was sweet.
When I was leaving after the time when Swamiji was at Hyderabad, like Rahul was talking about, and they wanted me to bring back some prasad for Swati over here and mail it in the U.S. So somebody, there were a number of people there, and somebody said, oh, we have to get the prasad for Swati, and they all left, and all of a sudden I was there alone with Swamiji while they were getting all these things ready. So it was a very precious moment to actually be there alone with him because he had to have his attendants with him all the time. And I, something happened, and I forgot exactly now, about his glasses. And I said, he was going to do something, and his hands, and I said, shall I take them, Swamiji? And he passed me the glasses, and then people came back in, and I was getting ready to leave, and he said, so give her something to take them with. And I said, oh, Swamiji, I wasn't asking for your glasses. All I want is your love. And he said, no. And so I didn't.
And Carla wasn't there to tell you you can't take them.
So I didn't take them. And it was a little later somebody came in with Swamiji's new glass. So you see, he was going to be getting rid of them. You're still taking them. but it was so sweet how I just said, shall I take them, Swamiji? And meaning to hold them. And there he was. They were gone. He would have given them.
But I think that's when you got the prasad, which was also a surprise for me because I called him after that. I was doing the triathlon, and believe me, if anybody knew me before that, the only time I would run is if I were chased by a dog. I was not athletic, and I actually went and signed it for a triathlon, which Swamiji hilariously laughed on the phone when I called him. Because my application pretty much read, how much can you run? Never ran. Can you swim? Not swim. Can you bike? Never sat in a bike. And you want to do a triathlon? And I said, I'm a fast learner, you know. And I called up Swamiji and I said, you know what, I enrolled into this triathlon. And Swamiji said, what? I still remember. I said, triathlon. And he said, okay. You know, he didn't want to say anything to discourage me. But at the end of a couple months of practice, I sent a letter with my dad, who Swamiji was in Hyderabad, and I sent a letter with my dad to say I was doing great, and I could swim, and I could, I had just learned to bike, and I was going to run very soon, and you know, so I gave him an update that I was getting better, and I was just going to do the sprint distance, as if justifying not to worry for me, you know, and nothing. My dad said, well, you read your letter, and my dad left. So I said, he didn't give you anything in his prasad, and he said, no. I said, well, okay, he offended in his own way, because he always did, you know, it was a blessing. But then I think Kate and all were sitting there, and Swamiji made, and because I was told by the Hyderabad devotees, he actually ordered special halwa for me to a local bakery. They made it with the wheat and badam, I don't know what you call, walnuts, badam, all the dry fruits, and four lbs of sweets. And Swamiji very well knows that I don't eat sweet at all. So all of a sudden, when Kate and all came in, I got this, they said, we have this huge packet from Swamiji, and they shipped it to me. And when I opened it, I was like, it's halwa, you know? Why would Swamiji send me halwa? He knows I don't eat sweet. You know, I was, and 4 lbs, I mean, that's like, I could eat it for a year. And then I read the letter, and the letter pretty much said, since you're doing the triathlon, we thought this might be helpful for the energy you might need to do it. So it was very sweet, and a year later he got the stroke, and of course I could only eat 2 lbs for the whole year. But the other two I froze it, because then he took samadhi and I just didn't have the heart to open it after that. So I said, okay, I'm just going to freeze it just the way it is, because that's the only memory for me. So I froze it. But I still remember him sending the prasad and getting how he got the halwa made, because I heard it from the local devotees that he was very particular about the amounts put into it, and he was very particular about how it was made, and he packed it and sealed it, and he said the amount of effort went into it was very touching. And I did do the triathlon, so that was good. And everybody stared at me, what is she eating? Because everybody was eating the gel, and
yeah.
I was eating the halwa, because somebody said to eat the halwa, so I was eating the halwa.
You had your own kind of power bar.
Fire power. Fire power.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, when I went to the ashram and met Swamiji the first time, I had seen all the pictures, and David had been, and Kate, or Larry had been. I don't know if Kate had been.
Yeah.
And everybody said, isn't he beautiful? Don't you love him? He looks like a nice old man. And then to go there and have been searching all this life and probably many more before this, and to feel like finally I was home.
Mm.
And that same unconditional love from Swamiji that everyone else has felt, and to feel like he knew every cell of my body, every part of my being, and loved it completely. And then to go back the second time and have that even deepened, and then on a funny note, when Michelle and I left, I guess that was the first time, we met with Swamiji, and he gave us prasad and then gave us his blessings, and then he whispered something to his helpers, and they came back and with more prasad, and he said, "And this is munchies for the road." How's it your munchies got to swamp? He knew me well.
Nothing passes him.
Well, it's hard to describe, isn't it, that experience that you have inwardly, and you do see people differently, don't you? You see Swamiji's picture, and you don't see an old man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't. You see something different because of the experience. It's hard to explain this to people who haven't had that spiritual side of the, in any way. I mean, people who have met Swamiji don't understand it. It isn't quite strictly meeting him. It's your own inner correspondence to the spirit. It's certainly the mark of this great saint, isn't it? Because so many people have that. Who have a spiritual attunement, and then when they're in the presence, they see it. You see people's faces light up when they meet them for the first time. The thing that I remember the most about him, just on a personal level, was this ability to speak to me. That, you know, from my own experience with mother, I never really had it quite that way. It was being just different experience. But for him, the first time it happened, I'd been into town. This is the first time I met him. So this was the third or fourth day after I'd been there. I had gone into town and I'd come back late for the chance to go for a walk with him. So I get off the taxi and come in the walk up there, and I see Swamiji is just at the Ramana building, a little bit late. I was thinking, I wonder why he's starting so late. And I thought, well, I could probably make it, but I have to really hurry. And inwardly, I knew I had all the time in the world. It was so strange. He told me that, and I was puzzling over that. How did I know? I mean, honestly, I was going through this in my mind. He told me, don't worry, there's you have plenty of time. And I went and did my business. I had to change clothes. And I came back probably 10 minutes later, it seemed like. And he was still there, just talking with other devotees, having lots of things going on. But with that certainty, it was so much like a communication, so much as though he spoke in my mind. It's a very remarkable thing. And then that, of course, that was the experience with him always, is that there were always the conversation in the room, and any question, anything I had in my mind was being answered almost in word form. Very, very interesting experience. And different than mother. Every saint is different.
Sure treated all of us mother devotees so well, you know. Mm-hmm. And every now and then you'd hear little rumblings from other people like, oh, you devotees and mothers always get special care. some of the Westerners.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just treated us so good.
Well, I have never been to India, but I've certainly been in touch with Swami Satyananda.
Mm-hmm.
Without having lifted a foot. And once I think you ask him, someone like him, for assistance, and that seems to be arranged by heaven, he was there to help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that he's helped me that many times, but times enough for me to know the full force of his help. Mm-hmm. And just a few months ago, really, he assisted me in something that I was having difficulty with in a very strong manner, in no uncertain terms. And I know he's here
mm-hmm.
whenever anybody is moved to ask for his help. But they were sitting here when I walked in the room, Mother and Satchitananda, in joy and welcoming all of us.
And Mother certainly had great love for him. She always sang his laurels, that really difficult experiences she went through in her first visit to the ashram, that of all the people there, she felt he was the most understanding and could have compassion. Both Papa and Mataji were rather above it all in that sense, that they didn't relate to Mother in what she was going through so much. And I think it was you that asked how Papa and Mataji responded to Mother going through this mystical crucifixion she went through, and his response was,
"Papa was smiling."
They smiled. Yeah.
Unaffected or not concerned, as they say.
Maybe he had to do that. Papa.
I
he said that she, perhaps he was helping her from within. Mm-hmm. That's in the video.
And mother's just kind of giving us an entry the way there at the ashram is absolutely true. We had all kinds of privileges that other people oftentimes didn't have. And I remember, I don't know what got into my head one time. I just went there in the evening and nobody else was there. And I just walked into the room and I pronamed as Swamiji, and then I just sat next to the wall. And I sat for about 50 minutes and then I got up and I left. And I made that into a nightly ritual. And before Swami Muktananda was Swami Muktananda, he was Gopi at that time. And Anantharam and other of the men were sitting around and they were taking dictation and just kind of business of the ashram. And so I did this every night. And at some point, one of the other devotees said, came to know of that. And they said, "You go in then? You're not supposed to go in then." I thought, oh, am I doing something wrong here? Am I not going when I'm supposed to be? So that was in the back of my mind, but it didn't stop me from going. I was of the mind, unless they threw me out, I was going to keep going. So one night I was not able to go. And the next night I came, and Swamiji said, "Oh, you didn't come last night." And I thought, oh, okay. I have permission for coming. So every night I would come in, and It was wonderful because they, as I say, they were doing just the business of the ashram. But the laughter and the ease and just the way of conducting business was just such a wonderful environment to be inside of. And everybody got a big kick out of somebody else who apparently had some inner prompting to come. It was an 11-year-old girl whose family did not have a house, and the ashram had provided a house for the family. So she had come in one night, and she'd asked Swamiji for a mala, beads, that she would count the Ram Nam on. And every night she would come in and report how many Ram Nam she did for that day. So they got the biggest kick out of this, because nobody else did this that I know of, and she just... Here's this tiny little 11-year-old girl coming in, and proudly her mother would be standing, kind of very shyly standing back. She'd proudly announce, you know, how many Ram Nam she did for that day. And then she'd go out, and Swami Muktananda would just roll on the ground laughing and just got the biggest kick. And since she spoke in Malayalam, I didn't understand what she was saying, so they would usually tell me then. And one night they got a bigger laugh than usual, and I said, "Oh, what is it?" And he said, usually she was doing 10 or 11 rounds of the mala, and this night it had only been 6. And I said, "Oh, only 6? Yeah, she had a lot of homework tonight." So it was just so delightful to have this kind of fly on the wall view of just how they conducted themselves, their business. Certainly getting the business done, but in a very delightful way. So felt very privileged to be able to sit and have that experience.
Another memory that brings to my mind is his answering the telephone with hello.
Much slower than that.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Quick. A lot of short conversations.
Or, and Bob Papa will take care of it.
Henry, anything you wanted to add?
Just before we were about to leave, I think it might have been the day we were leaving. And the other times when I had sat down with Swamiji, I didn't feel much then. I mean, I saw him and I saw a glowing man, but it was what I've heard about him, but I hadn't got that same experience that lots of other people have talked about. Mm. And I remember sitting with him that last day, and, I was sitting pretty much right next to him. Mm. And I think that I have a picture of that somebody took, and it's just this strip of me sitting right next to Swamiji. Mm. And he was looking at me, and that was the same moment that I got lost, and pretty much he told me who he was and told me who I was. And it was a life changing experience, and it was the very right when we were all about to get up. I was like, okay, I don't think he's gonna, I don't. That's fine.
Looked right at me and seemed as if that the same note. Mm-hmm. And it was very intense. Mm. Makes everything else worthwhile in life, doesn't it? I know when I met Mother, I had such a strong sense that this is what I had come on this earth for. When you can get to that point, we have some purpose in life. You made all the difference in the world. You could get through almost everything after that.
I remember Mother used to tell me when I went through some rough times, she would just say to me, whatever you do, just hang on with everything you've got. Don't let go. Hang on, she said. Just hang on.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it in life. You just got to hang on somehow.
And she was right too.
Yeah.
You really think you can't get through some things, and you can.
Funny story about Chad. Chad wanted to buy a Krishna statue for his mom and dad. It's the one that's behind Michelle there underneath Master. And Sri Ram took us Sri Rambat took us to this man who makes them for temples around in the area in a very traditional kind of a way. And he didn't have anything for us. And then finally he said, well, I have this one. It's about 20 years old. And it's been used in temples around here. And I've never thought of selling it. But he said, I think that perhaps this would be all right for you. So Chad bought it and brought it back and asked me to have it for a while and bless it, and then took it into Swamiji and asked him if he would bless it, and Swamiji kept it for a week or so before Chad was going to leave. So then Chad went back in to get the statue, and we were all sitting there, and Swamiji said, this statue is for David. So he hands it back to me. So Chad, in a very good tradition, acceded to Swamiji's wish around that, and so here it stayed since then. First Swamiji.
And how do you guys get along with Jerry and Lois?
And another funny thing is when it's my birthday, and Swamiji gave this hat that had been given to him. In this beautiful box. Somebody did a lot of work on it, and all the symbols on it and everything. So he told me to put it on. It's got beautiful peacocks on it and really lovely. I don't know if there's a front and back, so even fits. So just so many loving memories, and we've all been blessed whether we've met him in body or not. Yeah, I don't know how that was sitting.
God doesn't see you the way you see yourself. He's not critical of you. You know, he just loves you. And then Karen's just weeping, and it was just a few days ago, and when
Swati,
you were talking about.
Have one other reading from Swamiji. It was from beloved Papa's Jayanti, his birthday, in 1993. Brothers and sisters, we have all gathered here today on the occasion of beloved Papa's 109th Jayanti. Beloved Papa has given us the holy and all-powerful Ram Nam and showed us the path to realize our oneness with him, which, if we are successful, will enable us to enjoy eternal happiness. We call ourselves devotees of beloved Papa and Mataji. It is not enough to call ourselves devotees or feel that we are devotees. We should be devotees and try to live up to the ideals placed before us by them, so that we may reach the goal sooner or later. This ashram was started by beloved Papa and Mataji, not for their own use, but for the benefit of us all. For the last 60 years, many have been visiting the ashram to get the benefit of satsang, to get initiation into Ram Nam, learn how to progress on the spiritual path, and to get an impetus in their sadhana. Many have also stayed in the ashram in name of doing sadhana, as if they have come here for God realization only. In fact, beloved Papa and Mataji expected everyone here to think of nothing else except realization of God, as they have already gone through all the other enjoyments. That does not mean giving up everything worldly and taking the path of renunciation. It is only mental renunciation that Papa and Mataji taught us. Those who stayed in the ashram as sadhakas and also those who had taken mantra initiation from beloved Papa should live and interact in such a way that their actions mark them out as devotees of God. The actions of the devotees should be so loving and so selfless that they can be easily marked out. The devotee always thinks of the welfare of others. He loves others. He works for others. He does not care much for himself. He may have to take care of his body, but he does not worry over it. He lives only for others. This must be the attitude of every devotee, especially those staying in the ashram. They should realize that they are in the ashram, which is a field for selfless service, to make the best use of the conveniences provided here by beloved Papa and Mataji, and serve all the devotees who come here. Devotees come here with many worldly problems, which they have to face daily. When they come here, they want peace. They want to know how to maintain peace constantly, and it is the responsibility of every one of us in the ashram to help them as much as possible, so that they may go back home with a more peaceful mind and face the world in a better way than before. So it is a great responsibility of all those in the ashram to not merely look to their own spiritual progress, but also to serve others selflessly. This will only add to their own spiritual progress. Instead, what is happening is that we forget the ideals for which we are here. We forget that our main duty is to remember God constantly and serve everyone coming here, looking upon them as manifestations of God. We fail to chant Ram Nam constantly, and we fail to love and serve others sincerely. I'm saying this because of a recent incident which has hurt me and also others. There was a devotee staying in the ashram for the past many years who was often complaining about the conduct of others, which he thought was not right. In fact, he felt he was not respected by anybody. A sadhaka should never expect respect from anybody. Instead, he should try to give respect to everybody. He should feel that he is the dust of everybody's feet and be prepared to serve others with all love and affection, even if he were to get kicks and abuses in return. That should be the attitude of a true sadhaka. In this case, I told him that all these complaints were mainly because he was not doing his own sadhana sincerely. If he remembered God constantly and at least tried to live up to the ideals shown by beloved Papa and Mataji, he could serve devotees coming here with all love and affection, instead of finding fault with them. This advice, however, was not appreciated by him. It is the responsibility of everyone who is a devotee of beloved Papa and Mataji, or any other saint, to lead their life in a pure way, as pure devotees of God, aspiring only for God realization, loving everybody, serving everybody as much as possible, and, above all, being sincere in their approach. The strength to walk on the path comes only from beloved Papa. If we are true and sincere, he will surely give us the strength. The above-mentioned attitude of the inmate is a lesson to everyone in the ashram to be vigilant every moment in their lives, lest they should slip and go down in their sadhana. Be careful in your dealings with devotees. Serve them lovingly and selflessly. Make them happy, and thus help them to gain what they want from the ashram. I pray to beloved Papa to give the necessary strength and courage to us all, so that we may always remember him, walk on the right path, and reach the supreme goal soon. Om Shri Ram, Shri Ram, Shri Ram. Let's repeat Mother's closing prayer. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
My
heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
And surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Swamiji's radiance embrace you, engulf you, and lift you into the mighty kingdom of heaven to enjoy the supreme consciousness that he embodied. And may that love, unconditional, perfect love, ever manifest within your heart, even as it did his own. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Well, Christine says across Skype, that was wonderful. Thank you, Ram, for Skype. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. If they could just figure out how to get our prasad to us.
Swati's favorites?
No, it's not the halwa.
Power bomb.
The halwa is the freezer in Dallas.
Wow. That's sweet. Mm. You see why? That's good.
Very sweet.
I'll go do a coffee.
That you gave Otter and I the two giant pieces. You would appreciate it the most. Kill free sugar.
don't think we need to worry about when Shivananda told me to give me the extra amount, three times as much, that I want you to eat all of it. He meant something very different. I don't think we need to worry about that.
And what kind of prasad was it?
Oh, you have the typical sticky sweets.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And you got trouble for mother with
it. Oh, yeah. She had to bear quite a bit of what he gave me, I guess.
It was so cute with the small children there that would come up to Swamiji for prasad, and he would give them this candy, and they'd put both hands out, and he'd fill them up. Their eyes would get bigger and bigger, and just overflowing, and you turn around and look at their parents, and they're like, look!
That's what you should be doing. Okay, just